Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
11!
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
Nine, ten.
It's not ten. You see, you're on ten here. Where can you go from there? Where?
To 11.
11, exactly.
11?
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Talking about a memorable football day, a championship Sunday that had drama and controversy and replays and bad calls and annoying fans and some amazing plays, but because it was just so frigid out, probably a ridiculously high viewership. And a lot of stuff that was happening.
Well, we missed one thing. Got a great broadcast.
Yep.
I mean, really good broadcasts on either side. I was glad that neither game was marred by a lack of attention to detail.
And we talked to Chris Raybon from Action Network about his thoughts on that and our Super Bowl matchup.
So last week, yeah, I did a little review in the Midday Midway of a movie I'd seen, Aquaman. I did not care for it and thought it was one of the worst movies I've seen in quite some time. The only redeeming characteristic of it would be Jason Momoa and his undeniable charisma as just a person on screen. Apparently, there are movie reviewers who have gotten death threats for writing similar reviews, to having similar ideas about I did for not liking the movie Aquaman. I don't know, and I don't want to give the names of reviewers, but they're findable and out there. I have a general question. Even if you, and I got plenty of brushback, like on text, whatever, it's like saying, no, this movie was fine, it was a B movie, and it was good, and what, great. None of you needed to kill me, right? I mean, we can all be sane about disliking movies or liking movies and having a disagreement and moving on.
Yeah, I wonder how
we?
People are going to feel about the fact that I'm not even interested in seeing it. Does that make me even worse?
I don't know, but it was a bad movie, and we gotta pull back at some point from the liking and the not liking things, like chocolate and vanilla, right? As somebody once said,
Chris Bryant is allowed to not like St. Louis.
Of course he is. Of course, and he doesn't have to have a breakfast of Jordan Hicks fastballs because of it. It just doesn't have to happen that way. Everybody should be allowed to not like some things. I should be allowed to take my time to come around on Tony Romo. I'm willing to be convinced by facts otherwise. I think we all ought to be closer to that. Is all I'm saying.
I don't know if you did, but I and the family last night after football, after our homemade soup, decided to enjoy Super Wolf Blood Moon. And we had a perfect view right on our back step and in our little backyard there, bundled up and walked out the back door. It was awesome.
I completely forgot about it.
It was really, really
cool. What did it look like?
Well, first you start to see the eclipse beginning, and this was supermoon, meaning earlier in the night. It was probably a different part of the phenomenon when the moon first emerges. It's larger than it normally would be.
And when did it bleed?
Because of how close it is. Well, I'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll let it bleed in a moment. But it was the wolf moon because it is the first full moon of the new year. And it was a blood moon because the Earth cast a full shadow over the moon, which created a blood red color. And you can get some great time-lapse photography. But we in Chicago, right around 9:30 was when this started, watched it begin to creep a little bit. And it started to look a bit red as you saw the white sort of disappearing vertically. And it looked almost like the crescent moon, but vertically. And then, for a brief period of time, you could discernibly see a red-tinged moon as the shadow of the Earth fell over it, and it was right there for you, right there for the naked eye. You didn't need a telescope. You didn't need anything. Completely safe to view.
Huh.
It was. If you missed it, you should be sorry you missed it, because it really was memorable. It was really cool. I stood out there in the cold until I just got too cold and had to come in, but it was great.
We mentioned the noise in the Superdome. The whistler, what was it? The whistle monster?
Whistle monster.
Whistle monster.
Not monster.
Right.
Monster. He's more dangerous that way.
Apparently the noise had actual effect, not just on the Rams, but also on the structure. Videos have come out from fans, and there's, you know, like Jurassic Park, as the T-Rex approaches the Jeep and you see the ripples in the water cup.
Yes.
People are posting videos of their water cups, like sitting on a cup rest or something like that in boxes and whatnot. And there's a ripple that's going on in the water itself.
Well, a chunk of ceiling fell out of the press box.
That's what I've got for you here. Julie Boudwin of NOLA.com, which I believe is an offshoot of the Times-Picayune, but I can't remember.
It is.
Has photos of drywall. Or actual ceiling structure falling down onto the Superdome floor and shattering. It happened in a couple of different places, but the noise was apparently so loud so as to shake the Superdome and its actual foundation. That is incredible to me. And another piece of evidence that Sean McVay and Jared Goff just deserve a whole lot of credit for coming back in that game and finding out how the hell to play football in that noise.
Have you ever been to a game there?
I have, yeah. I went to the national championship, LSU and Ohio State, and it felt like a real super. Like, usually, those college games don't work out the same way. That noise doesn't exist the same way. But because it was LSU, that was a home game for them, essentially. So I'm there in the Superdome as that game's going on. 80% LSU fans, all kinds of noise. It was incredible.
Yeah, I covered the Super Bowl there in 97 and also did a Bears-Saints game. The difference in decibel level between the Bears game and the Super Bowl was remarkable. Our next stop, Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. The fourth largest city in Saskatchewan. Since 1984, residents of Moose Jaw have had one big thing about which they could boast: Mac the Moose. The Canadian city was long the proud owner of the world's tallest moose statue, a 32-foot steel-framed creature covered with metal mesh and cement. This from BBC News. And I did not know this. I did not know there was a claim to fame around the world to have the world's tallest moose statue. And there it is. That is Mac.
That's a very tall moose.
In Moose Jaw. But a few years ago, a slightly taller moose statue was erected in Norway. A much cooler looking, dangerous looking.
It's almost a millennial moose, is what it is.
Hood ornament, Terminator 2, shiny moose statue. That's gleaming. That's not like the cartoonish Mac the Moose, but that was in Norway, and that beat the record by 30 centimeters. But now, Moose Jaw has launched a campaign to reclaim the crown. According to Fraser Tolmie, the mayor of Moose Jaw, he said, "We're considered to be very mannerly and respectful, but there are things you just don't do to Canadians. You don't mess with Mac the Moose." Norway's Storelgen. And what do you think Storelgen means in Norwegian? How do you translate?
Tall moose.
Big moose.
Big moose?
Yes, Storelgen translates to big moose. Stands on a highway partway between Norway's capital of Oslo and the city of Trondheim. It was built in 2015 by artist Linda Bakke in partnership with Norwegian Public Roads Administration in an effort to reduce traffic accidents. I'm not quite sure how a giant gleaming roadside moose would do that, but she thought it was important that it was made higher than Mac the Moose, and she actually said that in the Daily Scandinavian. And Mr. Tolmie was recently alerted to the loss of the crown by Saskatchewan YouTubers who posted a video urging the city to add 31 centimeters to Mac or to rename the city simply Jaw. So the mayor says the city has since fielded a number of suggestions from residents on how to add to Mac's height. A suggestion about stilettos, most popular suggestion: what's the easiest way to make a moose taller? Give him a bigger rack of antlers.
Yep.
So they're thinking maybe they're going to do that. One of the most photographed roadside attractions in Canada. We'll see how far Moose Jaw wants to take this. And cities take their statue supremacy very, very seriously.
Oh, the Bunyan Wars have been. Yeah.
I learned this when I was in Bemidji.
Oh, yeah.
And right up there against the giant Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox, and all along the Paul Bunyan Trail, there are various cities that will brag about the size of their bunion.
Local militias will mount for these kind of things. It's very scary. Yesterday, Dan, was the anniversary of one of my favorite things on the planet. Yesterday was a good day. In the song, Today Was a Good Day by Ice Cube, Ice Cube offers clues to which day exactly was his good day. Can you name any of the clues that happened within the song itself? In the text, we find out what day is his good day.
Did he get a triple-double?
Messed around and got a triple-double. Clue number one is he went to Short Dog's house. They're watching Yo MTV Raps. Yo MTV Raps first aired.
With our guys right here.
Uh-huh.
At Lover's right down the hall.
August 6th, 1988. So it must be after that. Clue number two is that the single itself was released on February 23rd, 1993. So it must be before that day. Clue number three, and this is the one I always will never forget. The Lakers beat the Supersonics. So you have to pick dates between August 6th, 88, February 23rd, 93, on which the Lakers beat the Supersonics. If you add those up, there are 12 in total. We can narrow that down further. Clue number four, dates those Lakers won over the Supersonics where it was a clear day with no smog. Four of those dates.
Okay.
We're getting down to it. Clue five.
This is like Criminal Minds where the hacker is working. You know, can you narrow it down any further?
This,
oh, yeah, we go.
This is the best thing that I've ever seen. Clue number five. Got a beep from Kim and she can go all night. Beepers weren't adopted by mobile phone companies until the 1990s. So that rules out one of the dates where the Lakers beat the Supersonics and it was a clear day with no smog. We are left with now two dates.
Okay.
January 18th, 1991. January 20th, 1992. Ice Cube starred in the film Boys in the Hood that released late summer of 91, but was being filmed mid-late 1990 and early 1991. So Ice Cube would have been busy on set filming the movie January 18th, 1991, too busy to be lounging around the streets with no plans. Ladies and gentlemen, the only days where Yo MTV Raps was on air, it was a clear and smogless day. Beepers were commercially sold. The Lakers beat the Supersonics. And Ice Cube had no events to attend. January 20th, 1992. Yesterday was the anniversary of a very good day.
That's really nicely done. I admire your police work there, Lou. If I tell you that Tony Mendez died, what would you say?
Everybody goes. We're all going to die. Dust to dust. That's just, maybe that's just 15 years Catholic school working.
Name doesn't ring a bell at all?
Mendez, not Menendez.
Not Menendez. Tony Mendez. This isn't, not sports. Does that name ring a bell?
Should. Feels like it should.
Okay, what if I told you that
those are muted.
A story involving him when a very famous actor who directed the movie also played him and it won Best Picture?
Nope, nothing.
Tony Mendez was the CIA veteran who smuggled six State Department workers out of Tehran during the hostage crisis. The movie Argo.
Sure.
Ben Affleck's character, the movie directed by Ben Affleck, he played Tony Mendez, who led the extraction, the incredibly, incredibly complicated extraction via the Canadian embassy and through the Canadian government, and a harrowingly depicted, a wonderful film. I mean, really a white-knuckle thriller of a true story film.
It was pretty good.
Oh, it's tremendous. But the actual Mendes, Tony Mendes, passed away at age 78 after a battle with Parkinson's disease, and Ben Affleck took to Twitter last night, and he tweeted, "Tony Mendes was a true American hero. He was a man of extraordinary grace, decency, humility, and kindness. He never sought the spotlight for his actions. He merely sought to serve his country. I'm so proud to have worked for him and to have told one of his stories."
Hmm.
So it was a cool move by Ben Affleck. And this is a guy who really didn't want to be known.
That wasn't the job.
But ended up having his story told and immortalized in a fantastic movie. If you haven't seen it and you don't know the story, it is certainly worth your time.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. There is news afoot. The Washington Post has a report that has spoken with the NFL about fixing what ailed the Saints yesterday. We will let you know exactly what's going on when we come back. Potential fixes in the NFL after yesterday's incredible day of football. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
They blew the call, and man, there are a lot of opportunities, though, but that call puts it first and 10. We're on an E3 plays, and it's a game-changing call, and it's where it's at. So it's disappointing. Credit the Rams. They made enough plays, though. They won the game. The kicker made some big kicks. But for a call like that not to be made, man, it's just hard to swallow. And then to get a phone call.
Would you rather not have the phone call? Right? I mean,
I guess you'd rather not have the phone call.
We'd rather not have to get the phone call, but the league immediately took responsibility for it and said, yeah, we not only should it have been pass interference, it's a clear and egregious helmet-to-helmet.
Could have been unnecessary roughness, too. There's three different ways you could have called that thing.
And it could have been a pick six.
Also could have been a pick six. We just watched, and I'll retweet the video, I find it again, from the end zone, like an opposite angle, one that I hadn't seen on the broadcast. You can see Nickell just, I mean, if he plays the ball, that thing's going back the other way. I mean, the ball's out a little late. It doesn't have a whole lot of zip on it. And instead, Nickell Robey-Coleman decides to lay out Tommy Lee Lewis, and that's that. This, though, from the Washington Post, Mark Maskey, not Bill Brasky, that's a different person, Mark Maskey, writing this. NFL leaders and league's rulemaking competition committee plan to give consideration this offseason to making pass interference calls subject to instant replay review. It will be discussed at length, along with additional fouls that coaches feel should be subject to review, said one person familiar with the league's inner workings. Any change would have to be approved by at least 3/4 of the 32 owners. The competition committee has always been opposed in the past to making judgment calls such as pass interference subject to review.
In either direction? So can they say, can you review it and say, yes, that should have been a pass interference call, or that should not have been? Can they pick it up or put it down?
In reading here, it doesn't say so much. Let's finish this out. It's only a couple more graphs. The outcome of Sunday's NFC title game potentially could prompt a change. A pass interference penalty against the Los Angeles Rams went uncalled in late regulation. They beat the Saints. We all know that. The non-call was not reviewable. Al Riveron, the NFL senior vice president of officiating, told Saints coach Sean Payton afterward the pass interference should have been called. And you have, too, the Robey-Coleman saying after the game that's exactly how he was trying to play it. Had the penalty been called, the Saints would have had the opportunity to drain the clock before attempting a go-ahead field goal. Payton explained that to you in the cut that we aired coming back here from break. It doesn't say whether they'd go either way on this, and I would guess, because mostly the competition committee has balked at this, has not liked the idea of making judgment calls reviewable or reversible, that they haven't gotten to that yet. It would have to be, though, right? It would have to be able to be reviewed both ways.
I guess, but is there any way to put in some artificial threshold of egregiousness? Because obviously there's hand fighting on every play.
I mean, we'll get back to the Prince of Mukamara call or
Roquan Smith, where you say, it's probably an interference.
By making every play reviewable, you're asking the competition committee, you're asking referees to draw more arbitrary lines.
Yeah, the slippery slope argument on this one is going to be a reasonable one. It's one you got to hear out.
I hate making slippery slope arguments, but because you're enforcing this rule based on subjectivity currently, then by making it reviewable, you're going to have to make some hard and fast determinations, or at least the best you can. This is where they screwed up the catch rule for the better part of a decade. This is where you have screwed up the quarterback hit rule for really the entirety of the season, and though it's calmed down some, that's mostly because referees just didn't call the thing. And that's the problem you ran into with the Saints and Rams yesterday. They just didn't call that hit. They got scared. They swallowed a whistle. They choked on a flag. They held on to the thing. And they didn't want to call it because you don't want to be a referee that's making a call late in the game to affect the influence. Well, guess what? Not calling it affected the game in the same way.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Looking to take family or friends out to a game? Try a Chicago Wolves fan 4-pack. 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 drinks, popcorn, and free parking all at one low price. Visit ChicagoWolves.com and join the Wolves on their quest to be the last team standing. You had a comment regarding the Patriot fatigue that may be setting in. Are people fatigued?
Yeah.
I mentioned that I'm not allowed to be fatigued by pro sports greatness based on why I say I enjoy professional sports. There's a take here from Stonecutter.
Okay.
He says, I am also someone who generally roots for greatness.
Sure.
But the Patriots are hard to cheer for because of Brady and Belichick, and it's not because they're both insufferable, or at least not exclusively. With the exception of the 16-0 season, the Pats never seem like the most talented team on paper. Experts and casual observers alike agreed the Chargers and Chiefs were more talented. Mm. The Falcons team the Patriots beat was better. The Rams team the Patriots beat in 2001 was much better. The Seahawks were better. Most of the Peyton Manning teams, Colts or Broncos, were more talented. Many of the Steelers and Ravens teams have been more talented, as were many of the Tomlinson-era Chargers teams. Ironically, there have only been four times I thought the Patriots were definitively better than their Super Bowl opponents. The game against the Panthers in 03.
Yeah, clearly.
The two teams that lost to the Jets and last year's team that lost to the Eagles. Don't get me wrong, the Patriots always achieve greatness. But every year, I get the sense that they're third, fourth, fifth best team in the league, and then their coach and their quarterback overcome deficiencies that would kill other teams. As odd as this may sound, I would have a much easier time rooting for the Patriots if I thought they were better.
I don't know how that jives with,
it,
with
see
me
for me for me it makes my argument in that if you look at it as a body of work, that if you look in each of these individual seasons, the fact that they always do better than you think they should based on how good you think, you have to retroactively then consider that's where the greatness is.
To be honest, I'd agree. To be honest, that quells my fatigue. This and maybe I can define it better. Maybe picking the word fatigue was more of a buzzword than anything else. But it's not as though that I can't watch them anymore. It's not that this fatigue is in any way dismissive of what the Patriots have achieved. I just think there's something natural in watching each of the last, what was it, every single year, we're right back to where we started the season. The Patriots, and don't let Julian Edelman tell you different, the Patriots were a favorite, among the favorites, to be back in the Super Bowl and win the thing when the year started. So when you do this bet against this T-shirt crap, or you play this nobody believes in us but us, it leans into, I don't know, whatever bulletin board material that Bill Belichick wants to put up there. And I don't buy that, and I don't like that, especially for my professional sports franchises. That has no place there for me. It can for you, and that's fine. You get to watch it however you want. But that's for other places. That's for the NCAA tournament. You know, that's for the college football playoff. That's for that. That's not for professional franchises. And when you find the greatness of the Patriots in the little things, in the fact that they don't have a guy like Dee Ford a foot and a half offside, that they don't have mental mistakes like that happen all that often, and when other teams make them, they seize on it, snap the neck and sever the jugular and end things. Like that is part of their greatness. And it's very clear and obvious. It's why I think it's probably why the NFL, or maybe it's all beneficiary of the game you're putting out there, the quality of the game you're putting out there. That's why everybody keeps on watching.
773 texter says, Dan, you said it could have been a pick six. That didn't happen. The guy getting hit in the head did happen. Don't twist it.
It's not twisting it. Just look at the throw.
Not twisting anything. I'm just saying that if he had played the ball, he was over there before the ball got there and could have grabbed it and taken it on the dead run.
Which just That's plays all. Into how egregious the foul was to begin with.
By the way, congratulations to the Chicago Bears, who have just added a Pro Bowler. Mitchell Trubisky is going to replace Jared Goff.
Be damned.
In the Pro Bowl.
Well, how do you think Trubisky did?
Plan to watch now.
Really?
No, I don't think I do.
Mitchell Trubisky, Pro Bowl quarterback.
Maybe I'll watch. I will watch more highlights of it than I'd ever had before.
We are going to give away another opportunity to win $1,000 in cash in just a moment, so keep listening. Gearhead Boy's out today in Lexington, Kentucky. He's on the score. What's up?
Dan, Connor, good to talk to you guys. You were talking about the pass interference, and what I think, maybe you guys will disagree, what I think should happen is, since it's a spot foul past 15 yards, any pass interference over 15 yards should be reviewable. And, you know, Dan, they've talked for a couple of years now about having an official in New York that could buzz in. That helmet-to-helmet and non-call would have been a great opportunity for a guy in New York to buzz the referee and stop play for just a second and issue a penalty right there. If you're going to make it a spot foul, you reward quarterbacks who are stronger arm because you can make it a 50, 52, you know, yard penalty, whereas, you know, some of your weaker arm guys or older quarterbacks like a Eli or something are not going to get that benefit. And how many in a game are there that are old? And I'm not talking about illegal contact or defensive holding. Leave those alone. But anything that's a PI over 15 yards, I think, should be reviewable.
That's reasonable. I think if you trust the eye in the sky to be objective and to see what we're seeing, I wouldn't have a problem with at least putting that in on an experimental beta basis and say, have that person say, well, whoa, hold on a second. He never touched him, or guy didn't turn his head. Should have there's all sorts of ways, as long as we know what the criteria are and we know it when we see it.
Yeah, it's weird for me to be in this spot because I'm usually pro replay. I want to get it right. I think the call should be right. But I think in this instance, you're dealing with referees that just didn't want to throw it because of when it was in the game and what the score was too. So maybe it feels so big because of when it was. I don't know that it's that big a deal league-wide. I get wanting to change it. I just, the slippery slope thing worries me. And I think, too, you know, one play doesn't decide the outcome of a game.
Right. But it does sometimes.
But it does.
Except when it does.
But it does sometimes. It's just, I would feel better about it if the Saints had punched in one of their two field goals. I would feel better about it if Sean Payton had managed the clock better and not ferreted away some his late possession to draw out clock. Like, they are not without sin here, but they don't deserve to have that call not made. They just don't.
One thing you need to understand, too, that this is for texters who are asking, did that guy really say the text like that? How do you know the texter talks like that? Here's the deal. Every dumb texter sounds like however I want them to sound. It's one thing. It's territory that you cede to me when you decide to express yourself via text.
You do get the voice.
I get to make the text sound however I want. That's part of the fun of reading texts, is the dumber the text is, the dumber I get to make it sound. I do that. So get used to it. And if you want to be part of the conversation via text, understand that if you send a dumb text, I'm going to read your dumb text. For example, here's one. Dan, how do you know that texter talks like that? Or this one from the 708.
Did he really say the text like that?
There you go.
Right, exactly. That's how these things happen. I mean, now it is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is value. Text value to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is value to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. And it's rare that we get to see the Bulls broadcast team start buzzing around.
That's right.
Now we know why they're not let out during sunlight.
Filtering in.
You know, talking.
Getting Jeff Mangerton in here.
Say, talking stats with the wizard, the giant pulsating brain of a Jeff Mangerton. You see Steve Cashel out there orbiting, getting ready his deep Bulls thoughts for you.
This is a rare time for us. It used to happen to me a lot. I used to work over at the same spot. This is nice. It kind of feels like old home. Better.
708 texter. Dan, do you think I'm dumb? No, I don't. See, if I could make you sound like James Mason. If I could, the great thing about reading text is it gives me control.
Dan hates texters. He doesn't like James Harden's game, nor does he like cake. Solid list.
So that is a strange list for you to have, by the way. Not liking the league's MVP, not really, and then not liking cake. Those are two things. Like, your three-legged stool holds two things there that's like, that's Those aren't very popular legs.
And no, you cannot.
I don't know what your third leg is there, but it's not very popular.
And you're not allowed to request that your texts are read in a certain voice. I'm sorry. Those requests will not be honored.
On Fridays, maybe.
Or I will get the, if you do
maybe
place
on
a request,
Fridays.
I will read them wrong on purpose. Our thank yous today go to our guest, Chris Raybon, who joined us. Our producers, Eli Hershkovich, Rick Camp, and Ray Diaz. Brian Gerch had the video feed, and nobody had our updates.
No, we've got to get out the way.
Because Bulls basketball is
coming
up.
That's why.
They're here. I did check. We called the league office, and we did find out if, in fact, somebody has to win this game.
Yes, there will be a win awarded.
And we have been told your starting point guard today for the Cleveland Cavaliers is Cameron Payne.
Go Bears!
I think that's all you need to know. It's the Cameron Payne Revenge Tour, and you are going to hear it next. Bulls basketball is coming your way on your home for the Chicago Bulls. We'll be back tomorrow on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.